Well, good morning, North Point. How are we doing? Good, good. It is so good to see you. My name is Clay Cooney. If we haven't had the chance to meet, I get to lead our young adults ministry here. Yep, shout out to my young adults over here on the left. They came out today for me. I love it. But if you didn't know, we do have a young adults ministry. It's for adults in their 20s. We have bi-monthly gatherings. We meet on the first and third Thursday of every month. And we've actually got some cool things happening right now called Summer Nights, where we're meeting in the West Auditorium. And our next one's on June 5th. So if you are in your 20s or if you know someone in their 20s, you should definitely send them our way. It is a ton of fun. But I've been super excited about this morning. A little bit more about me. I'm from Marietta, Georgia, so not too far from here. And my family and I, including my three brothers, I'm one of four boys, we would drive over to Alpharetta very regularly as I was growing up. We attended North Point, so I've been through the Wambaland, the Upstreet, the Transit, the Inside Out, like all of it. My brothers and I were a product of this place. I feel like I'm a product of this place. And I feel like at least three out of four of us turned out pretty good. Like, if, I'm not gonna say who the one is. They're probably watching online. I'll let them figure that out. But I'm just kidding, kidding. Something else about me, I'm married to my amazing wife, Allie. She is the best. And she also grew up in this church. She is a regular attendee as a kid. But we never ran into each other. We never met each other growing up until we eventually got post-college. We joined the residency program. We started pursuing seminary together. And we were a little bit like overachievers. We wanted to learn the original languages like Koine Greek and ancient Hebrew. And so we like to say that we fell in love over a dead language, which is pretty romantic, right? But I needed a lot of help. Like, I wasn't good at languages. Like, I needed help studying, and so it all worked out. We had a lot of coffee shop dates. And it all worked out because now we are celebrating our fifth anniversary. We have been married now for 5 years. Yep. We made it. I feel like this is the first big one, and we had a lot of plans. We were like, man, maybe we go to Europe. Maybe we do something fun, like go get an all-inclusive. Maybe we go on a cruise, just the two of us. But we decided instead to go to Disney World. And not just the two of us. No, 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 don't be silly. We took our 2.5-year-old daughter, Haven, with us as well. And it was a ton of fun. Some of you are like, man, y'all are wild for that. I would never do that as my 5-year anniversary. But when I saw Haven meeting Mickey, like, it made it all worth it. Like, she was running into Mickey's arms. It was the best thing ever. And I will say also, navigating those lines, those crowds at Disney, it's like a team building exercise. Like, me and Allie are better now because of it. Like, we're on the other side. We're more in love than ever. It was amazing. But speaking of marriage and speaking of like making adjustments in order to be a better team building exercise, one of the things that you have to do when you get married is start adjusting to the other person's preferences. Some of y'all know what I'm talking about. And so one of the preferences that I had to adjust to when I got married to Allie were her TV show preferences. Allie liked reality TV, and the only reality TV I ever wanted to see was a baseball game or a basketball game. Like, sports, that's where I draw the line. And so I can't tell you how many times I found myself kind of watching a game on my phone while she's got The Bachelor or something on the screen. Like, some of y'all know right where I'm at. You feel this right now. But one of Allie's favorite shows that she loved to watch was a show called Survivor. Got any fans of Survivor in the house? Yeah, she was, when we got married, she was at the peak fandom of Survivor. Like, in her, she was in her super fan era at this time. Like, she was quoting Jeff Probst at dinner. Like, that's how intense this was. She was going back and watching old seasons. Like, she was super into it. And so when we first got married, she was trying to get me into it as well. And so she would say things like, Clay, if you just tried it, I know that you would love it. Or, Clay, watch one of these challenges. It's basically like CrossFit. You love CrossFit. It's like CrossFit with torches. Like, just watch this. Or, Clay, you should definitely apply. Like, I think you'd be pretty good at this. And then she went so far as to say, Clay, I think you could win at this game. Like, you should seriously consider applying. And honestly, that's where I was like, okay, I'll check it out. Like, I like things that I'm good at. I like things that I can maybe win. And so one episode turned into 10 episodes. And all of a sudden I'm screaming Blindside. Like, I'm super pumped to be watching this show on Wednesday nights. But Survivor, it really is amazing. I've started to become a huge fan. It takes a bunch of adults and a bunch of strangers and puts them on an island where they don't really know each other. They don't have enough food. They don't have anything like that keeps them comfortable. They don't have pillows or blankets, no shelter, none of the modern day conveniences that we're used to. And then in every episode, they're asked to compete in a challenge in order to win back food or win back supplies or ultimately to win immunity. Because the whole goal of the show, the way to win, is to ultimately survive. It's to keep your life in the game. It's to not let your fire get snuffed out. Like, so immunity is the best thing, because when you go to tribal council, it means that you cannot be voted out. You cannot lose your life in the game. The whole goal is to survive, or the tagline says it all. It's outwit, outplay, and outlast. Now again, this is just a game. It's like they get to go back to their homes. They're not actually losing their life or being stranded on an island. Like, they get to go back at the end of all of this. But I love it because it's kind of like a little social experiment that we're invited into to watch. Like, we get to see these people being pushed to their limits, pushed to the extremes, like removing any comfort, anything that they're used to. They are basically trying to build relationships while hangry at all times. Like, can you imagine trying to do that? I can't. I wouldn't be great at it. And so they're trying to figure all of this out. And it's interesting, like, what will they do to survive? Like, the show asks the question, how far will they go in order to win and make this, in order to survive, to maintain their life in the game, to preserve it, to protect their life? And the answer, after nearly 50 seasons of this show, 50 seasons, is this. It is a lot. They will lie. They will cheat. They will steal. They will gossip. They will backstab. They will betray people. They will swap alliances at the drop of a hat. And so perhaps this reminds some of you of work or school or holidays with extended family. But these players, at the end of the day, they will do a lot to survive in order to protect themselves, in order to keep their life in the game, because it is the means to winning $1 million. For these players, survival is everything. And it makes for great TV. Like, I love grabbing my bucket of popcorn and a Coke and like getting cozy with my blanket in order to watch these people duke it out on a remote island somewhere. Like, I love getting ready to watch another massive betrayal like behind the TV screen. But the last time, one day, this thought popped into my head, and it was like, wait a second. Allie didn't just say that I would like watching this show. She said I would be good at this show. She said I could potentially win this show, which is like telling me I'm not just good at this list of stuff, I'm amazing at it. Like, she's telling me that I'm really good at it. And it's slightly concerning as a Jesus follower, as someone who grew up in the church, this church even, as a pastor, a professional Christian, like, am I really capable of doing those things? Am I really capable of winning at that? And more than that, Allie, it's slightly concerning that she still chose to marry me after all of that and knowing all of this. So I started asking the question, would I really be good at those things? Would I really do well at Survivor? Would I stoop that low? Would I go through all of that? And the truth is, honestly, probably. Like, I think I would be pretty good at Survivor. Like, I do think I could win, outwit, outplay, outlast. I do think I could just write it off as part of the game. Like, this is just part of Survivor. And the truth is, I think we all might be pretty good at this game. I think we all are pretty good at surviving, at being strategic, at adapting and figuring out how we survive, not just in the game, but in life. Like, we actually have this part in our brain called the limbic system that is there to help us protect ourselves, to help us survive, to keep our life. It's helping us avoid danger. Like, survival really does feel like a very important part of life, not just in games, but in life. And I mean, some of us are truly survivors. We've battled through illnesses. We've fought through addictions. We've overcome obstacles. Like, some of us have literally had to fight for our marriages to keep them together. Some of us have to work really hard, extra hard, in order to climb the ladder, in order to get the job that we really want. I know this is a small example, but I felt this on some level as a student. I don't feel like I was always naturally like an amazing student. I didn't just naturally get A's or B's. Like, I couldn't sleep through class and not really take notes like my friends could. I felt like I really had to work. I had to fight in order to survive and in order to secure the future that I was trying to find myself in order to get into the college or the seminary or whatever it is. I had to take copious notes. I couldn't nap during class. I really had to work hard. I had to fight for it. And so sometimes life reminds me of this little phrase coined by Charles Darwin back in the day. He said in the 1800s, survival of the fittest. Because the truth is, life can sometimes feel like a survival of the fittest game that we're playing. Like, if we're honest, it's a dog eat dog world out there. Like, we are all just trying to keep our heads above water. We're all just trying to look out for ourselves. We're trying to secure our futures. We're trying to get the parking spot at Trader Joe's. Like, it's a battle. Some of y'all know what I'm talking about. Because what else are we supposed to do? What other options do we really have? What other choice is there? If you think about it, what else would we do? Would we give up? Would we just kind of give in, let people walk all over us, not try to pursue a great future, not try to look out for ourselves, not try to protect ourselves or preserve our lives, maybe not snag the parking spot that we really want? Of course we fight for our lives. Of course we look out for ourselves, because survival really is everything. But as true as that may be, and as accurate as of a statement that we may feel like that is, what we're gonna see this morning is that Jesus had something very different to say when it comes to this survivor mindset, on what it means to be an ultimate survivor. It's why I'm titling this message, Ultimate Survivor, because today Jesus has something really important to say when it comes to this. And what's even more interesting is that he says this in a day and age, not like ours where we're fighting for parking spots or trying to win reality TV shows. No, he's saying it in a day where people were literally desperate to survive, when people were literally fighting for their lives, when they were in a real moment of danger. And so here's the backstory. Here's where we're going this morning. Jesus and his disciples are making their way into Jerusalem to celebrate a massive feast. It's called Passover. It's this major celebration in the Jewish religion. And so people are flocking from all over to go back to Jerusalem. I mean, it's a scene. The crowds are going crazy. Like, you think Disney in summer is crowded. Like, Jerusalem is packed. This is on another level. People are coming from all over. And as they're making their way in, they can feel a little bit like threatened. They can feel like they're kind of in danger. Jesus and the disciples know that it's probably not going to go super well for them. They're always kind of under threat of being arrested. And Jesus has literally told his disciples it's not going to go well for him when they get back to Jerusalem. But then all of a sudden, the crowds kind of start parting. The sea starts to part a little bit. Jesus starts to make his way in. This is what is known as the triumphal entry. And so there's these palm, they start laying down palm trees and say, that means victory. And they start shouting Hosanna, which means salvation. And so in their minds, Jesus is like the Messiah. He is the anointed one. He is the king that they have been waiting for, the promised one. And so everyone is getting excited. Like, survival is here. Like, finally, we might start to win. And so this is the context for where we're kind of going this morning. And now we're going to pick up in John chapter 12, verse 20. It says this: "Now among those who went up to worship at the feast were some Greeks." Now the word here for Greeks is just this little word, Hellen, which means that it's basically just someone who's non-Jewish. Basically means it's someone who's a Gentile, or another way that they would often talk about it is a God-fearer, or someone who is just seeking truth. And so these Greeks, they come, and in the next verse it says, they came to Philip, who was from Bethsaida in Galilee, and asked him, "Sir, we wish to see Jesus." And so Philip then went and told Andrew. Andrew and Philip went and told Jesus. So these Greeks, the truth seekers, they come to Philip and they ask if they can speak to Jesus. And then it's kind of funny. I feel like we kind of get this little game of telephone. Like, some of you have played telephone with a kid before, and you're like, man, no way that this message is gonna get to the actual person or the way it's supposed to go. But we see it goes from Philip, and then he asks Andrew, and then Philip and Andrew kind of go together, and then they go and ask Jesus. And I'm believing that because they're adults, I think the message probably did get through to Jesus. But these Greeks clearly have some questions. They're trying to get to Jesus. They're trying to reach him. They want to ask him some stuff. They want to find out for themselves, is Jesus really who these people say that he is? They want to know, is he the one that they have been waiting for, the one that people have been talking about? And so finally, once they get to Jesus, we get this interesting response. John 12:23 says, and Jesus answered them, talking to Andrew and Philip. He says, the hour has come for the Son of Man to be glorified. To which we're like, wait a second, pause. Like, I thought they were asking you if they knew you or they wanted to come and ask questions. And now you're saying the hour has come for the Son of Man to be glorified. Like, weren't we just asking you to come and meet the Greeks? I mean, I feel like they were probably expecting a simple yes or no, like maybe a, okay, yeah, maybe I can go and talk to them, or one of those like eye roll emojis, like with a shrug, like, okay, fine, I'll go and talk to them. But instead they get something completely different. It feels off topic. It's actually a little shocking even, because up until this point, Jesus had been telling a completely different story. Like, we have not seen him say something like this up until now. I mean, we see it in John chapter 2. Jesus' mother is asking him to perform a miracle. And Jesus said to her, woman, what does this have to do with me? My hour has not yet come. And then we see it again in John chapter 7. Jesus' brothers are trying to get him to go up to another festival, a different festival of tabernacles. And Jesus said to them, my time has not yet come. And then in John chapter 8, John is narrating this moment talking about Jesus. And he says, these words he spoke in the treasury as he taught in the temple, but no one arrested him because his hour had not yet come. Again and again and again, not yet, not yet, not yet. Wait, wait, wait. And then all of a sudden, seemingly in an insignificant moment, in something that feels completely out of the blue, Jesus decides that now is the time to tell him that it's his time to be glorified, that now is the time for him to be revealed. That now what the disciples see and what the disciples know is going to be made known to everyone, that it's going to be revealed to everyone at once. All will begin to recognize him as king. All will begin to recognize him as the Messiah, the one who was promised. The gloves are coming off. It's go time. The fight is on. Israel will survive. They will regain independence. And so Philip and Andrew are like, wait, okay, let me grab my megaphone, like my bullhorn, like let's go tell everybody. Let's make an announcement. Like, where did I put that thing? I want to go tell the world. Like, now is the time. Jesus is going to be glorified. This is what we've been waiting for. But what's interesting is Jesus in this moment, he doesn't call the cavalry. He doesn't rally the troops. He doesn't sound the alarm. No, instead he says something very interesting. He says this. It says, truly, truly, which is like this little phrase that adds emphasis. It's this little phrase that's like the pastor coming to the front and being like, lean in, like, listen up. If you don't hear anything else that I say today, like, what I'm about to say is the most important thing. And so Jesus is like, truly, truly, I say to you, unless a grain of wheat falls into the earth and dies, it remains alone. But if it dies, it bears much fruit. To which many of you are like, wait, what am I leaning in for? Like, what are we talking about? Okay, Jesus, cool, cool, cool. Like, tell me more, because for those keeping score at home, just so we're all on the same page and like we're understanding what's been happening. We started with, hey, Jesus, the Greeks would like a word with you. To where Jesus is like, hey guys, okay, cool. My hour has come. My hour has come to be glorified. To now we're talking about death of wheat. Like, it's a roller coaster. Like, what's going on? And for those of us who aren't farmers, who live in Alpharetta, Georgia, who don't have a lot of wheat going on in the backyard, maybe we have some honey wheat bread in the pantry. Like, but other than that, for those of us who don't handle a lot of wheat, I brought a picture for us. So here's some wheat. This is what Jesus is referencing in this moment. And then we see that we've also got a picture of a grain or a seed that comes from wheat. And so what he's saying is that in order for the plant to grow, the seed must fall from the stalk, go into the ground, be planted. It then has to actually decay or die, be split open, and then it will grow. And then it will become what it's supposed to be. Then it will produce fruit, it will produce life, and the seed will begin to multiply. But if it doesn't do that, if the seed stays whole, if it stays safe, if it stays unplanted, it will remain alone. The seed will not become what it was meant to be. Season after season, we see this. This is a natural rhythm of life. A seed must die for a plant to grow. Or another way to put this is, through death comes life. And this makes sense to us. Like, some of you are like, man, this is awesome. I feel like I'm back in science class. Like, I've got the diagrams. I've got that little lima bean taped to the window, like, thing going on, like, waiting for that thing to sprout. Like, I'm in it. Like, we love science. But others of us are sitting here like, wait, why are we talking about wheat in church? Like, what's going on? What is Jesus talking about? And we see in this very next phrase kind of where Jesus is going with all of this. Verse 25. He says, whoever loves his life loses it. And so immediately we start to begin to piece together or understand why Jesus is talking about the seed or the grain of wheat. He's not just talking to tell us about science. No, it's actually a powerful metaphor. He's not just talking about wheat and seeds. He's talking about you and me. What he's doing is he's relating a seed that refuses to go into the ground, refuses to be planted, to a person who loves their life just a little bit too much. A person who makes preserving their life their aim in life. A person who holds on to their life for dear life. Or another way to read this is, whoever holds on to their life for dear life loses it. He says that holding on to your life or gripping your life too tightly, not letting go, has the exact opposite effect of what you actually want it to. And whether we realize it or not, I think we all know that this is true because we've all experienced this kind of person. You've been around this type of person who's just completely devoted to themselves, who doesn't think how their own pursuit of happiness, their own pursuit of victory is actually impacting everyone else around them, who's really good at winning and achieving and maybe even accomplishing their agenda. They're very good at getting to where they want to go, but they don't realize that it's pushing everyone they love away from them. They have no one to share it with. The purpose and the meaning behind it all gets a little bit lost. They forget who they actually did it for. And before they know it, they eventually lose their life. Maybe not their physical life, but they lose themselves in the process. Because self-preservation can become an idol. It can become an idol for many of us. If you were here over the past couple of weeks, you know we've been doing this series about idols. And for some of us, self-preservation or survival can actually become ours. We can begin to idolize or put too much weight on the perfect life, the life we want, the life we had planned, like what we wanted our life to look like. We are just ultimately trying to protect it at all costs. And what can happen, what Jesus is telling us, is that when this type of life becomes the ultimate thing, it actually can't hold up. What happens is it goes from a good thing to a God thing, and eventually it collapses under the pressure. So this is what Jesus is getting at. It's what he's trying to teach them, and it's what he's trying to show us this morning, that in a world that's all about survival of the fittest, in a world that's all about outwit, outplay, and outlast, where the goal is to stay safe, stay ahead, stay in control, we can start to believe that the way to win is just to protect ourselves at all costs. But Jesus is saying, no, 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 you have gotten it all wrong. It's different than that. It's actually more like the way of a seed. As I was preparing for this message, I was reminded of this book that my daughter is obsessed with. She's two, and every night for weeks, she only requested that I read the seed book. Because this book, it's called It Will Be Okay, but it's actually about a seed, and his name is just Little Seed. Like, it's that simple. And so I love this book. I mean, I actually enjoyed reading it to her. But this line kept striking me as I was reading it to Haven, and I want to read it to you all as well. It helps us get a sense for where we're going. It says this. It would say over and over again, little seed likes living inside the cozy packet on the rickety shelf in the farmer's dusty shed. He did not want to go. Again, little seed likes living inside the cozy packet on the rickety shelf in the farmer's dusty shed. He did not want to go. And so for the little seed, what it's trying to show us is that he doesn't want to leave. Like the seed loved his life. He liked being in the seed packet. He liked being in the shed. He liked to protect what he knew. Like he was comfortable. He liked where he was. And so one day when a farmer comes along and he comes to plant the seed, he gets annoyed. You can see the seed is frustrated. He's scared. He doesn't want to go into the quote, dark and messy ground. But what he doesn't realize is that these small disruptions are actually going to be the way to his future transformation. Like once buried, once in the dirt, once he is actually planted, he eventually becomes the plant or the tree that he was always supposed to be. In the end, his life is more than it ever would have been if he had stayed on the shelf. And it's so simple. It's a simple idea, but it took a kid's book to make me realize that this is exactly what Jesus is trying to show us. That is counterintuitive. It's upside down. It's not the way that we would typically think, but it is the way of Jesus. It's the way that leads to life. It is the kingdom way, or maybe even the ultimate survivor way. But Jesus isn't finished quite yet. He actually goes on and says this line right here, verse 25. And whoever hates his life in this world will keep it for eternal life. And so you all are like, whoa, 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 Clay, you had me with the book. Like I was with you, I was tracking. But now you're telling me that Jesus tells me that I'm supposed to hate my life? Like you want me to hate my life? I thought Jesus was promising me life to the full. Like I thought Jesus promised a life of abundance. Like Jesus, two chapters before this, you literally said, I came that they may have life and have it abundantly. I thought the good life started right now. What do you mean I have to hate my life? But Jesus isn't contradicting himself here. No, when Jesus uses the word hate, it actually has a way different meaning than we would think about it today. We often think of the word hate as this deep emotional rage or this anger or hostility. But in the New Testament, this word hate is contrasted with love a lot of times, and it actually holds a different meaning. It has this idea of separation. It refers to distancing oneself from something that is opposed to God or God's ways. So in this sense, hatred is less about deep emotional rage, anger, hostility, and it's actually more about rejecting or detaching or separating from that thing which is not good. Meaning, this is not about self-hatred. We know that Jesus is not about that. No, this is about separation from a self-preserving way of life. It's about separation from a self-preserving way of life, separating, distancing yourself from that selfish part of you, from the part of you that's just about me, myself, and I, that part of you that is just about me and my comfort, me and my happiness, just trying to win, that sees the world and the people around us just as competitors that we're competing against, to try and outwit and outplay and outlast. See, we have this tendency. We think surviving comes through protecting, but in reality, it comes through separating, or it comes through giving your life away, through dying to self, through sacrifice, through trust, through letting go, through being open-handed, through giving up control. And as you can see, this list looks a whole lot different than the list that we started with. This list looks a whole lot different than the survivor mindset. It's almost like it's the exact opposite. But Jesus is trying to tell us that this is the way, that this is the way to victory, to the life that you really want, the life that you were created for. And it's not through self-preservation. No, it's actually the opposite. It's through dying to self, which admittedly, y'all are probably like, this doesn't sound too great. This actually sounds like a burden. Like this is something that I have to really work on. It's something that I have to approach delicately. Like it is not something that I necessarily want to do. But what Jesus is saying is that this is actually an invitation. Like this is not bad news. We shouldn't see it as bad news. No, this is good news because Jesus is showing us the way. He's inviting us into something more, something better, something greater. He's giving us another way, the way that we were actually created for. Because the path to true victory, the path to winning, the way to survive, it's not through winning. It's actually through submitting. Or I love the way that C.S. Lewis encapsulates all of this. He says it right here. He says, give up yourself and you will find your real self. Lose your life and you will save it. Submit to death, death of your ambitions and favorite wishes every day, and death of your whole body in the end. Submit with every fiber of your being and you will find eternal life. Or the life that God has for us, the life that he meant for us to live. This is the path. This is the way to win. This is how we play ultimate survivor, become an ultimate survivor. It's not by holding on. It's actually by letting go. And the truth is, isn't this exactly what we are inspired by? Like, aren't these the stories that we gravitate towards? Like, this is actually, when we put all this together, it is the hero archetype. Like, I think about Frodo Baggins carrying the ring into Mordor, like at great personal risk to himself in order to save Middle Earth. Or I think about Harry Potter laying down his desires, laying down his life even in order to protect his friends and defeat Voldemort, even at great personal risk. Or I think about Luke Skywalker, who decides to obey his calling, his true calling on his life, despite the temptation towards revenge and power and all of those things. Or I think about the Good Samaritan, who's willing to give up his time, his money and safety in order to help a stranger. Each of these stories, they model what following Jesus looks like. It's giving up our own desires for the sake of others. It's stepping into discomfort, and it's obeying a greater calling rather than chasing personal ambition. Or to put it simply, the third way, the kingdom way, the ultimate survivor way, it looks like others over self, sacrifice over comfort, and obedience over ambition. And see, each of these may feel like a death. Like, it may feel difficult. Like, we have to put something aside. It may hurt. But in the end, like a seed falling to the ground, it is actually through death that we live. And then listen to how he closes. This is so powerful. The final verse, John chapter 12, verse 26. He says, if anyone serves me, he must follow me. And where I am, there will my servant be also. If anyone serves me, the Father will honor him. And so the invitation is simple. It's to follow. And Jesus says, if we do this, the Father will honor it. Like, this is the kingdom way. This is what Jesus wants us to do. It's the ultimate survivor way. It's these three simple things, to put them back up there. It's others over self, sacrifice over comfort, and obedience over ambition. And if I'm honest with you all, like, I don't like doing this. Like, I'm confronted by these things just like you all are, because as you know, I am a survivor. Like, I like to win. I don't like to lose at anything. Like, I don't like to lose at games. I don't like to lose money, like my time, any of that stuff. I like doing things my way. I don't naturally choose others over self or sacrifice over comfort or obedience over ambition. But what Jesus is saying, all of this actually became very personal for me not that long ago. It was actually just a few weeks ago during the Easter service. Many of you were maybe here. But for me as a staff member, I was actually asked to serve during those services, because we usually have more crowds at those services. And so we needed some extra help. And so I was like, okay, I'm going to help serve in Upstreet. I got placed in Upstreet. And so I found myself on Easter Sunday hanging out with a bunch of second graders. Like, not my necessarily ideal Sunday morning. Like, I probably would have rather been sleeping in, been outside, maybe attending the service like many of you were. But I found myself there, and it was pretty clear right away that these kids had zero interest in the message. They did not care about what I had to say at all. Like, they were fighting with each other. They were tickling each other. I literally at one point had to physically put myself in between like a circle of them just to try to get them to pay attention a little bit. And in this moment, it began to surface all the reasons why following and serving and sacrifice, all of this stuff is actually so difficult. Because in that moment, I'm sitting there thinking, like, what am I doing here? Like, I went to seminary. Like, I have a degree. Like, and I'm hanging out with second graders. Like, I worked hard for all of this, and here I am. And it feels like in these moments where we're serving and, like, putting others before ourselves, it can feel like a waste of time. It can feel like, what am I doing here? I have so many other things I could be working on. Like, this doesn't feel very meaningful to me. Like, this isn't helping me further my life. But then as I was sitting there and I was reflecting on all of this, it really began to hit me that, wait a second, no, this is it. Like, this is what Jesus is talking about. This is the game of Survivor. This is what he's telling us leads to life. Like, these are the little things that ultimately actually help us win, that actually help us win the game of Survivor. Because in this game, in the way that Jesus teaches us, it's not about me. It's not about getting what I want. It's not about getting all of my desires fulfilled. It's not me chasing personal ambition. No, in fact, it's the opposite. It's actually about me losing. It's actually about me letting go. It's actually, I get life by serving, not by serving myself. And so we can feel like it's a waste of time. We can feel like we're just filling in or we're just kind of biding our time, but it's not true. Because in reality, I'm dying to myself so that I can help further other people in the journey. And you wanna know how I know this is true? You wanna know how I know that this is real, that this is the way to life? It's because someone did it for me. It's because someone did it for Allie. Because once upon a time, I showed up in Upstreet and had a leader that I was like, this guy's probably wasting his time. Like, I don't know who this person is, but I showed up and just to church one day and all of a sudden I had a leader named Chris. I still remember his name. And he was just there every single Sunday. I was probably the one like tickling the other kids. Like, I was the problem, but he was just there every single Sunday. Then I graduated to transit or middle school and I had a small group leader named Eric and he was just there every single Sunday. And I was, as a middle schooler, probably thinking, what is this guy doing? Like, this, why is he even here? And yet he was just there over and over again. And you start to ask the question, were they wasting their time? No. Did my parents think that those guys were wasting their time? Of course not. Do I look back and think, what was that guy doing? Like, what a weirdo. Like, no. I'm grateful. Like, he went through all of that in order to give me a better life, in order to help me. And so he was planting himself in order to help give his life away, in order to create life on the other side, in order to help me grow. You know what they were doing is they were planting themselves in the ground rather than remaining a seed on a shelf. They were planting themselves in the ground rather than remaining a seed on a shelf. This is what it looks like to lose your life. This is the way that Jesus invites us. This is the way to true life. This is the ultimate survivor way. I'm gonna pray for us, then we'll continue on. Heavenly Father, thanks for this morning. God, thanks for this message, not just for them, but for me. God, thanks for revealing this to us. Thanks for giving us the way. God, I mean, left to our own devices, we would be going in a completely different direction. And so, God, I just thank you that you sent your son, that he gave us the way, the truth, and the life. God, and so I just pray that we take this to heart. I pray that it's not a message that we just heard in here and we don't really think about again, but it's something that we actually begin to apply to our life. Maybe we actually do think about serving in Upstreet or one of these different environments, and maybe planting ourselves in order to help someone else grow, make someone better other than ourselves, because that is the way to true life. God, we love you. We're so grateful for everything that you've done for us. It's in Jesus' name I pray. Amen.